हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Process of the evolution of the universe. According to Shankhya, the entire world evolves from the interaction of Prakriti with Purusha. This interaction does not refer to any kind of orderly conjunction, as in the contact of two finite male and female material substances. It is rather a sort of effective relationship through which Prakriti is influenced by the mere presence of Purusha, just as sometimes one body is influenced or moved by the presence of a thought. Evolution cannot occur by the self, Purusha, alone, because the self is inactive. Nor can it be initiated only by Prakriti, because Prakriti is not conscious. The activity of Prakriti must be guided by the intelligence of Purusha. This cooperation between them is essential in the evolution of the universe.
So it's subtle, this connection is subtle, not that it's one is managing it. It's just that consciousness, that thought, that desire, that is then what creates then the imbalance in the Prakriti, which makes the modes of nature then come out of balance and then start creating things. Right? That's the idea that's given here. So that would mean that... That would mean that these elements then, when they are, how do you say, Prakriti is then the perfect balance, so anything that takes it out of balance, then there's manifestation. When it's in perfect balance, there's no manifestation. So that would mean then the consciousness of the living entity then would create all these different manifestations of the world. And when I say evolution, because one thing is always transforming into another. Whatever is there, it will transform into something else, that into something else, that. It just continues to go on like that. So then, given this, two questions yet arise. How can two such different and opposing principles cooperate? And what is the interest that inspires them to interact with one another? Shankhya replies that just as a blind man and a lame man can cooperate with each other in order to get out of a forest, by the lame man's guiding, while the blind man carries him, so do non-intelligent Prakriti and inactive Purusha combine with each other and cooperate to serve their purpose. Notice here is also the element of inactive Purusha. That because we see is that when we're dealing on the Brahman level, that the principle of something, the cause of something, that's inactive. It's a quality. You know, it's there. It's existence. It's the basis of the activity that becomes the form. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. You have a principle, like we say, let's say principle cooking. So cooking is not doing anything. Right, but then the material, the external manifestation that can do that is the cause coming from cooking, like pots and pans and fires and all these different things. Those do the activity, right? And from that come the result. But it still must be guided by the principle of cooking. Does that make sense? So we see as in each one is one's conscious but inactive, one is unconscious but active. Right? So, it means it's working in this way, but unfortunately they're not taking it further to understand that the potencies are coming from that which is conscious and active. Because They're not understanding that the material energy is a reflection of the spiritual energy, which is both conscious and active, right? And Krishna, who is, you know, is also conscious and active. But he's active in rasa, right? But in principle, he's the Supreme Lord, so everything's carried out by his energy, so he doesn't have to act. As that Krishna is aloof, because he doesn't have to do the work. But by his desire, his energies do all the work. You know? Does that make sense? Like that.
Okay, so both the non-intelligent Prakriti and inactive Purusha combine with each other and cooperate to serve their purpose. What is their purpose? Prakriti requires the presence of Purusha in order to be known or appreciated. The Purusha requires the help of Prakriti in order to distinguish itself from Prakriti and thereby realize liberation.
Right, but then in this, if it's unconscious, why does it need to be appreciated? You know what I'm saying? That means inherently he's not something about the Prakriti of this need, but they're not understanding that's coming from something higher, like that. So here are where you find these weaknesses in the philosophy. But their point is, it's just like with the Mayavadis. Since their point is just to be liberated, to be freed from the material energy, then they don't realize that if the whole point is it's vivartavad, that it's not actually transformed. You think it's transformed, but it's not actually. So Brahman is never transformed. You just, in illusion, think it is. Right? Then that means, technically speaking, then your existence as separate doesn't actually exist. So therefore, if it's all an illusion, why are you worried about it? You know what I'm saying? So that means then you as an individual have no meaning, no importance. So why are you making such a scene about it? Because you're just an illusion anyway. Right? But this element that is consistent then with their philosophy would not be appreciated because it's against the nature of the soul. Because the soul has to be happy. The soul, you know, has to be active, has to have knowledge. Right, has to strive for some higher position. So, therefore, because of the nature of the soul, they act in these things that are inconsistent with their philosophy, but actually consistent with their actual nature. So those things that they're just acting on nature, they don't even bother discussing in their philosophy. It doesn't even come up. You understand? So in the same way here is that why would the Prakriti, when Prakriti is the state when the modes are in perfect balance, why would they need to be out of balance, you know, and then be appreciated? If Prakriti is unconscious, why would it care if anybody notices or not? You know what I'm saying? Because then that would mean that the Prakriti has changed into, you know, some nice thing just so the people will say it's nice. You know what I'm saying? If it's unconscious, then what's the need? So these are little points where they have little problems. You know, that's why it's not Uttaramimamsa. Right? Thus, according to Shankya philosophy, the goal of the manifestation of the universe is to attain liberation. So, right, so now we have the, I mean, that's why they're not worried about the Supreme Lord or, you know, anything else like that. Because the system works perfectly just between the soul and the material energy. But then, why would Prakriti, now if the masculine principle needs to become liberated, but in the liberated state, they won't cause any disturbance to the Prakriti. So then it will act in its natural form as Prakriti instead of the manifestations of the modes of nature. But then why would that be? It means the soul becomes happy, right? He's liberated, but then the material energy, according to this definition, would then not be satisfied because it wouldn't be, who would be appreciating? You know what I'm saying? So we see it's just, you know, I'm the controller and enjoyer, and it's self-centered. It's not actually considering beyond the individual.
So the self-realization is self-centered. Through the interaction of Purusha and Prakriti, a great disturbance arises in the equilibrium in which the gunas are held prior to manifestation. Disturbance arises in the equilibrium in which the gunas held. Means, in other words, before this disturbance, the gunas were in perfect balance. So by this interaction of Purusha, then they become disturbed and then all these things happen. In this process, Rajas, the active force, first becomes irritated, and then through this, the other two gunas begin to vibrate. This primeval vibration releases a tremendous energy within Prakriti, and the dance of these three energies becomes more and more dense, thus manifesting the universe in various grades and degrees. The process of manifestation originates from the unmanifested unity and completes its cycle in 24 stages. The process of manifestation begins with the infusion of Purusha, consciousness, into Prakriti, the material cause of the universe. Metaphorically, it is said that the Prakriti is the mother principle, and the Purusha is the father principle. The mother is fertilized by the father. The Prakriti is the soil in which consciousness can take root. Thus, Prakriti, the material cause of all existence, embodies consciousness. So it says in 24 cycle stages, so that must mean the 24 elements.
So as the consciousness comes in, then that starts the next. Is that the ego means for our understanding, we'll have to see what they use as the catalyst here, but is the false ego, the false identity. So when false ego is added to Prakriti, then it transforms into Mahat, where the 24 elements become separated. Then as you add again, then each one starts coming out. You know what I'm saying? So you add again, then you get the false ego comes out. You add more false ego, you get the intelligence. More false ego, the mind. More false ego. So as it goes, so then the earth element, that's the grossest of them because it has the max amount of false ego in it. So that's why the external is generally what we see because it's got the maximum ego. It's the external by what you get the greatest ego from. Something unseen is not necessarily appreciated, but what you can see, then that's there. Does that make sense? You identify with these things. So, like that. So then it must be that the other is that you wind it up by doing it backwards. And so it goes back until consciousness is removed from Prakriti, then it's peaceful again. But here it's just this automatically happening. Well, we know it each time it has to be added. Right? That's described in the Sringa Purana. Mahat or buddhi. False ego, yeah. Because it's because of false ego, the material manifestation is there. If you're in pure ego, then you don't need the material manifestation because you'll be involved in the spiritual manifestation. That means those who are on the pure platform don't need to be in the material world. They can function perfectly in the spiritual world. But the soul who is not pure, then his place of functioning is the material world. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Is there a similar system in the spiritual world also?
Similar system meaning?
In a way that the more gross it gets, the more, I don't know, what it is.
What the point is that in the spiritual world, it's all connected to Krishna. So it just means the devotees, they have that their particular affection for Krishna. From that affection, then their forms manifest. Mother Yashoda has parental affection for Krishna that manifests the form that Mother Yashoda has. You know what I'm saying? So it's a further manifestation of the same thing. So here, what's here in this world is a manifestation of our false ego. There is a manifestation of their real ego. You know what I'm saying? There it's not created, it's always there. Here you have the creation and dissolution, so this process is going on like that. But there you don't have that. You understand? There's no need. Here it's there because we bring it out, because why would the mechanics of this, why would creation be so important? Because if you want to get out, you go out the same way you came in. So you go backwards through the process. Does that make sense?
Meaning you give up the false identity and the real identity?
It's like this. By false identity, the wurgle is manifested. So that means by applying the real identity, it will be dissolved. You understand? So our involvement in it, that's what's so perfect about it, is we can liberate ourselves from the system, and the system still remains because it's complete in itself. At the same time as the process of self-realization is complete in itself. Right? So that means the process of self-realization and the continuance of the material existence, the two can go on simultaneously because each are complete in themselves. So they can function together, because being complete, then they can function together. That's the common principle. But at the same time, being complete, they can be independent of each other. That makes sense? So an individual soul can go back to Godhead and the material creation goes on. But at the same time, when the living entity is in the material world, then he functions within that, and when he's trying to get out of the material world, he can still function in that. You know, because everything coming from Krishna, it's all perfect and complete. So that completeness is the common element. Does that make sense? Yes? No? So does this all make sense, or is it all, rocket surgery here? Yes?
Maharaj, is it a fault here where it says, well, not a fault, but maybe some contradiction, it says Prakriti is the mother and Purusha is the father, but then Purusha is embodied by Prakriti. It's like
that's there, but it's still, you're working on these principles there. It's that the seed will grow a tree. But where does it grow the tree? From the soil. You know what I'm saying? That the seed is the masculine principle and the earth is the feminine principle. Like that. So the tree will grow from the earth. But it will grow according to the nature, the consciousness of the seed. You understand? So the soul has that consciousness, so that will manifest in the material world. Right? So that manifestation in the material world, but that's manifested by the material energy. It's made of material energy. But it's according to the interest or desire of the living entity. Does that make sense? So, yeah. So, all these things, that's the nice thing about the creation. There's a consistency on all levels. You just have to know what angle you're supposed to be looking at it from. Right? So, there's always a consistency. They always work on the same principles. Right? Okay. Okay, so the point is, thus Prakriti, the material cause of all existence, embodies consciousness, right, and gives the body to the consciousness. The consciousness becomes embodied through Prakriti. Right, consciousness is there, but it actually takes on a form through Prakriti. Like that. So that's what here is. You have the consciousness, no form. This has forms, but no consciousness. So when they're combined, then the Prakriti will give form to the consciousness. So in that way, each need each other. The masculine principle, the feminine principle, they go together. Like that. So you just have to know which does what. Then you understand it's functioning. Mahat or Buddhi.
Isn't it that consciousness also has form?
Consciousness, you just is conscious, then that consciousness can take forms. Means you can be conscious, then you can become Krishna conscious. Or you're conscious and then you can focus on some material. So being conscious is a generic principle. Right? Then you have to be, you know, focused on something.
Okay, no,
you understand? You can be awake and you're just awake and then you look at a picture or talk to somebody or something within that of being the awakened state. So conscious means that you're, you know, means that it's just that the state of existing, you know, in, you know, generic awareness. Then you have to be specifically aware of something if you want to interact or understand or, you know. Is that okay?
No, I saw this with the soul. The soul is conscious.
The soul is conscious. That's another thing that we're talking about in the material world here. You don't mix. Yeah, like that. Because we're looking at here, see, the material cause. So what's happening here is they're giving a very nice description of the material cause. But I'm not sure if the other one, because one name uses efficient cause, so I'm not sure if that means that's Krishna. Like that, because I know there's two words used. One means, you know, means higher principle, one means the lower. There's remote and efficient. Remote and efficient. So efficient would mean the material energy, means it's getting it done, and remote would be the lower. Yeah, okay. So here is then this material cause, then that's talking about the efficient cause, you know, what's actually getting it done. Right? But they're leaving out that that's based on the remote cause. Right? So just like cause and effect, like that, is that the effect is coming from the cause. It's based on the cause. It has elements of the cause. That's why it's able to be coming from there. It's dependent upon it. But then each effect becomes, in one sense, the cause for the next effect. You know what I'm saying? You have the earth, you know, as an effect, then it becomes the cause of the tree. The tree then becomes the cause of the effect, which is, you know, how you say, furniture. Right? The furniture then becomes the cause of the effect of, you know, either nice, you know, proper use or prestige or things like that. You know what I'm saying? So each one it goes. So what's being missed in here is they're seeing this whole efficient cause, but they're not in any way catching the remote cause. So you don't understand it's actually the Supreme Lord and His energies, which are the principle on which then the cause and effect of the material world is happening. You know, so then the Lord and then His energies. So then the material nature is one energy. You know, and that. And so then that cause and effect. So their idea, Purusha and Prakriti, they're correct in that, but they stop at Purusha and Prakriti, mean Purusha meaning the soul, and not meaning the Lord. And Prakriti only is external energy. It's not the jiva and the spiritual energy. So these parts are they're missing. You know, so they're trying to construct a complete philosophy out of only a partial. And so from that, because it's partial, that makes it very, very difficult to operate. In other words, your good qualities and your own endeavor is all you have. Does that make sense? So if somebody's very qualified in one sense, then it would be easier to use this stuff. But still, it'll be very difficult. But if you understand, accept the theistic Shankhya, where you're dealing with the remote cause as the main principle, then by the Lord's grace, this whole process becomes very easy. Right? So that's going to be the difference between these two. But the principle is the same. This is just like showing the smaller circle. It's not showing the bigger circle. Right? The smaller circle may be very complex, But it's still the smaller circle compared to the bigger circle of you know, Krishna and his potencies.
Is that okay? Mahat or Buddhi. The first evolute of Prakriti is Mahat or Buddhi. Right? So the same what we're describing. You have Pradhan, and then you have Mahat. Right? Mahatattva, Mahat. And so here they're establishing Buddhi, because then they're conscious, the living entities. And they're situated on that platform of intellectual platform brings, by situating there, the purpose is to get to the platform of liberation. So in Mahat, the jivas are actually in a liberated state, in Vasudeva Sattva. Right? It doesn't mean they're in a devotional state, because they still have are contaminated by the Purusha Bhav. So that's why the jiva here is being called Purusha. But it seems in here he's taking it as a good thing rather than necessarily a bad thing, because he doesn't have anything to compare to. He just sees that's the nature of the soul in this world. So then he has the Purusha Bhav, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So even though he's liberated, he's not actually situated in the devotional platform. That's why it's not considered real liberation. So the actual, so that's Vasudeva Sattva. But the real Vasudeva Sattva is when you have a relationship with Vasudeva. So in that situation, in a relationship, you're situated on that platform of Shuddha Sattva, which then is eternal. Otherwise, this platform of Vasudeva Sattva is temporary. Right? But they're both the same stage. The jiva is situated on the same stage of liberation. All the jivas in the spiritual world are liberated. They're not contaminated by the material energy. But the difference is they've taken their liberated state and chosen to serve Krishna. Right? While in the material world, the concept, the liberated state, means you're out of the material world, but they haven't chosen to serve Krishna. So they go back to that neutral state. And that, even though that is the energy that the jiva comes from, this neutral state, the tathasta shakti, it's not their natural position. Because they're dependent, therefore they must be under the protection. They're very small. So they must be under the protection of the internal or external potency. Because tathasta means you're in between, so you have to make a choice. So they've chosen not to be under the external energy. And they go back to their tathasta position. But, and so they foolishly think that's enough. But they haven't made the choice to take shelter of the internal potency. Therefore, then the impersonalist again will come down into the material world, because it's the only energy they've ever taken shelter of. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. Vasudeva Sattva, Brahma Bhuta, technically, in one sense, they're the same, but the Vasudeva Sattva is explaining the position of being situated in the pure mode of goodness. There's no passion or ignorance. So that's Vasudeva Sattva. So now we can see here is that the condition, I mean, yeah, the living entities, they're not, it means you could say not technically conditioned, but that potential is their inclination. And so even though they're on the liberated platform, their natural tendency is to become interested in material action. While Brahma Bhuta is used in relationship to the Vaishnav coming to back to that platform of Vasudeva Sattva. Right? So liberation is generally used by the Mayavadis and that, or these other personalities, mukti, to mean where the jiva has elevated himself out of the material consciousness back to the tathasta state. And they'll consider that permanent, so they say you're liberated. The devotee calls that state Brahma-Bhuta, because there he's on the Brahman platform, but his purpose is to get to prema. He's trying to get to the other side. So there's a difference between these souls in that
whether they see getting to the Brahman as a goal or a means. So that's how you identify. It, technically, it's the same state, like that. But we see is that it's different. It means that Brahma Bhuta, I mean, that platform is the Mayavadis are on, but they think that's the end, so they're not actually, it's not Brahma Bhuta. They're not moving beyond. The Brahma Bhuta, they're moving beyond. Those who have come to that perfectional state, then they're also on the Brahman platform, but they're already, you know, they're eternally situated there by their consciousness. Those on the platform of Brahma Bhuta are endeavoring to get to that platform, and those who are on, use the same position and call it liberation don't know that platform exists. You know, that's all. You know, it's like the fish jumping out of the water because it's being chased by a bigger fish. So it's out of the water, the big fish can't get it, but at some point it's going to fall back into the water. You know, so it hasn't figured out that, you know, according to Darwin, it simply has to jump the other way onto the land before it lands, grow feet, and then it just, and lungs, and then walk off, and then no more big fish to bother you. Of course, as you take another few steps, then, you know, there's somebody else there that also has four legs and lungs and will eat you there. So you could get away from them by jumping back into the water, you know, so then I guess, you know, you become a porpoise or a whale. I guess the bears were having problems, so then they went back as whales. You know, they all these interesting concepts are there. On this. Okay, we understand. So are we understanding here where we see the similarities, but at the same time where the problem is they never take it far enough, and because they don't take it far enough, that's where the mistake lies? It's the problem is generally not in their understandings and their process. It's that their understandings and process don't end in Krishna. That's why it says, in the Nectar Devotion, mental speculation that doesn't end in Krishna, then that's useless. So all this stuff, this is your mental speculation, in that you're taking, you know, the philosophy, and then by contemplation, applying it on those things around you that you see. So if that purpose is Krishna, then it's part of Buddha Yoga. It's the Jnana Yoga aspect of it. But if it's not, that's not his purpose. It's, you know, Brahman or something else. Then it's just Jnana. It's not Jnana Yoga. And so all you get, you can maximum get is liberation. And that's, even that I'd say is technically theoretical. We only hear about it. It's mathematically possible. But if anybody's ever done it, we never hear of it. You understand? The only people we hear of that are confirmed that were liberated all went from that platform to devotional service. Right? We never hear of anybody being in that liberated state and, you know, everything was fine that way. We hear of people who were impersonalists like that and didn't understand things beyond like that and may have been situated nicely there, but we never actually hear that they're liberated. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? The first evolute of Prakriti is Mahat, or Buddhi, the intellect. This is the great seed of the vast universe. Therefore, the name, Mahat, which means the great one. Right, so the Vedic literatures always talk about this Mahat. It's considered on the platform. If you take in the creation, everything's made out of the three modes, and then each of those three modes is divided into three. So within goodness, what is goodness of goodness, Mahat is one of the elements. Like that. There's only a few elements in there, in the Mahat. I think Mahat is there, Brahma is there, the Vajapatis, the Nakshatras, the Vedas, the Dharmashastra. I think these are all on that platform. This is the state of union of Purusha and Prakriti. That's when the glance of the Lord, you know, the living entities are injected. Here they're not seeing that point, so they're just seeing from the point of Prakriti and Purusha. You know, so their seeing is incomplete, so therefore they come to an incomplete conclusion. Though Prakriti is unconscious material substance,
It seems to be conscious and realizes itself as conscious because of the presence of the conscious self. Mahat is the state in which Prakriti receives light from Purusha, the fountain of light, and sees itself. And this process of seeing is the beginning of the manifestation of the universe. The individual counterpart of this cosmic state, Mahat, is called Buddhi, the intellect, the finest aspect of a human being that has the capacity to know the entire personality in its pure, full purity. Buddhi is the immediate effect of Prakriti, resulting from the guidance of Purusha. Therefore, Buddhi is the evolute closest to Purusha. Buddhi is manifested from the sattvic aspect of Prakriti, because the nature of sattva, weightlessness, clarity, and light, is affected sooner . The guy's either very late or very early, isn't it? Unless it's another kind. Not sure. Looks like a June bug, but it appears it may not be. Very small June bug. It's a November bug. When it gets full size, it'll be a June bug, right? Is affected sooner by the active force of manifestation than would be the heavy and unclear nature of tamas. Because of the sattvic quality of buddhi, the light of the self reflects in the intellect similarly to the way that an external object reflects in the clear surface of a mirror. The self, seeing its reflection in the mirror of buddhi, identifies itself with the reflected image and forgets its true nature. Thus, the feeling of I-ness is transmitted to buddhi. In this way, the unconscious buddhi starts functioning as a conscious principle. Right? So in other words, what they're talking about here has truths in it. This is mechanics of how the living entity becomes conditioned. But notice here is that they're having to give a reason, right? Because they're philosophers, they're scientists. They have to give a reason why the creation is happening how it does, how it unfolds the way it does, according to the Vedic literature. But they're doing that with leaving out the Supreme Lord, right? But they're looking, they see the mechanics of it and then have to say, well, this is because of this, this is because of that, you know. You know, it's just like you have a theory that's incomplete. The living entity does evolve through the various species of life by consciousness, right? When the consciousness is lower, then they take birth in lower species. From dealing with that, then they slowly, slowly evolve up through higher and higher species. Not that body changes, they die and change bodies, enter a new body. But not having that complete understanding, then they try to figure out how this body transformed into that body. You know, like that. This guy had a wart on his nose and so that transformed into, you know, the beak on the bird or something. You know, just, they have their very nice, theories. So in the same way, not so gross, then these Vedic philosophers are having to do the same thing. Not accepting the complete whole, they're having to take these little bits, these little pieces that they have, and try to make a complete sense out of it. But it can't be complete because completeness comes from the Lord. What's manifested from the Lord is complete. Therefore, in one sense, you can look at the material nature. It's come from the Lord. Therefore, you can say it's complete and then come up with this philosophy. But at the same time, its completeness is because of coming from the Lord. So leaving that out, then they miss out on, you know, actual completeness. Because the Lord is Purna. Right? The spiritual world is Purna. Material nature is not Purna. Right? Does that make sense? So, the thing is that because when the jiva comes in contact with the material energy, then it causes a disturbance. So the three modes come out, right? Then you get the mahat. So the first manifestation that comes, because the mode of goodness is light, what is it? Weightless clarity and light, therefore it's closest to the consciousness. And so therefore, the first thing to manifest is intelligence.
So they're taking this element. So in the this is basically defining your primary creation. Like that. Okay. Okay, so when Prakriti and Purusha are combined, then you get this Mahat, which is there, but they're also trying to put it into a, you simultaneously are dealing with the subtlety and a situation. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So then the jiva, because by the coming in contact with the Prakriti, then that first manifestation is buddhi, which then holds because of that conscious principle. Then when the jiva sees that consciousness that's there, or that intelligence that's there, that's come actually from himself, reflected in the material energy, seeing that, he identifies with that and says, this is me. You understand? Because the material energy, something is there. Why is it happening? It's because of the consciousness of the living entity. Their consciousness has then created all these different things. But they're not mechanically doing it. It's working by the modes of nature under Maya Devi's directing it, under the direction of Krishna. But sees it there, and so he identifies with that. So in one sense, it's mine because it's my consciousness that's created, that form has manifested. I haven't done it, but it's been manifest because of that. At the same time as is more subtle than that, to really make that where you want to interact with it and deal with it, is because the Lord has entered it. And he's the supreme consciousness. So he's the attractive feature for the jiva. So because of that, then the jiva thinks, I am, he's attracted to that material form because of being filled. It actually, Krishna is present in it, in his potencies, right, in his Brahman form. So that consciousness then is attractive for the living entity. At the same time, it's in line with his own consciousness, so he can actually relate to that specific manifestation. Otherwise, everything is having that, is Brahman. But what is in line or in tune with our conditioned nature, that's what we identify with. So we see our conditioned nature reflected in it. Right? So we identify. Does this make sense? Yeah. So these are very nice for understanding these points. We don't emphasize them as much because we're dealing with the original form of this process. So if it's Krishna, then, we identify with Krishna, and so he's the one we remember, and so everything else becomes secondary. But for these philosophers, they don't have something else. So this becomes the primary. So the mechanics of how they got in, how they got out, that is the primary topic for us, for them. For us, it's secondary. The primary thing is Krishna, how to develop that relationship with Krishna. So if it's developing very nicely, great. If it's not, then we can look at the mechanics and figure out, okay, what is it? I like these things. So that means that's being reflected, from my own consciousness. Therefore, it's my consciousness that's putting me in this situation. You know what I'm saying? A devotee will say, oh, what can I do? That's the situation. Everybody's doing like that. But why are you in that situation? Because it resonates with your own consciousness. So it's just, you're just seeing yourself in the reflection of what is there around you. And you identify with it. So therefore you say, what can I do? In other words, you say, this is me. So I can't change me. But the philosophy is saying, means that's your conditioned nature. Yes, it's true. That is there. But you are different, so you can take up devotional service. You don't have to identify with that in the primary state. It's a secondary state in that it's your conditioned nature, so that's through that state is how you're going to interact with others. But it's not your primary state. Therefore, you can be God conscious despite the situation, whatever situation you're in. That's up to you, but you identify, so it's me, so why do I have to? But if it's not you, if I'm servant of Krishna, then that means I have to serve Krishna. So since I don't have a spiritual form to work through, I work through the material form. And this material form is in this situation. Therefore, this situation, I engage in Krishna service. You understand? So that would be the mechanics of how one would use that. Does this make sense? Right? So they're very useful, all these things, if there's a problem in just the unfolding of the Bhagavad Dharma. Right? An obstacle is there because of our material identity is so strong. Then these philosophy can break it down where it's actually workable. Because if it's just an emotion, I feel like, then that's harder to work with. You can work with intelligence. Right? So therefore you take it and apply on all this and break it down. Because buddhi being the original form before the manifestation, therefore everything can be viewed through intellect. Right? Because the effect has to have, you know, be connected back to the cause. So the cause of everything is this position of mahat, of buddhi, intelligence. Right? Because that's where the souls come in contact with property that manifests the buddhi. Everything else is going to come after that. So anything else that's come after that can be looked at through intelligence. And you can bring it back up to this point. And that way you can remove yourself from material energy, all the gross manifestation and attachments up to this point. Now, basically from here, then this is where the problem starts for the others. They can't really get past this point. Because to get past this point, then you have to accept the Supreme Lord and our position there. Then once we've gotten to here, then we stop looking here and then deal there. Is that okay? Yeah? Does that make sense? Cool. Okay. So, as Prabhupada mentions, the path of the impersonalist and our path getting out of the material world is the same. The difference is they stop once they get out and we keep going. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You want to go to Calcutta. There's a bus going to Calcutta. So the devotee gets on the bus and the gross materialist gets on the bus. They'll both get to Calcutta because the process is the same. So the process of getting oneself out of the material energy is exactly the same. Just for us, it's a secondary process, and for the impersonalist, the primary process. So that makes it more difficult for them because that is their main thing. Well, we have the Lord and His mercy, you know, the Vaishnavas like that. So that means that process of liberation is secondary. In fact, it comes along with the package. You know, you endeavor for prema, you will get liberation. It's not a side thing. You order the French fries, you will get ketchup. You know, but they only order ketchup. You understand? And so that's hard. You go into a restaurant and just ask for ketchup, you'll find it's difficult. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the difficulty. Okay? Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandini.